Welcome back to Shattery Myths. We have Kirk on the line, and we're going to continue our review of Jaokonin 3. But before we do, you cited what is the called the Aaronic blessing from Bamidbar, which means in the wilderness, Numbers, yesterday. And a good friend who listens to this program regularly, a good friend of both of ours, member of the covenant, sent me actually a link to the site where that particular translation occurs. And I can see why you were not zealous about recommending the site. The guy got some things right, but just in his preamble, he takes a very Christian point of view.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's selling his books to the Christians.
Because he, when he talks about Barak, which he says is to kneel down and present gifts, he says, as you know, as we should kneel down and present gifts to that would be deserving of the king of the universe. And so he has no concept as that in this case, it is Yahweh doing the kneeling, as it is always the case of Yahweh doing the kneeling, not us doing the kneeling. So he read the words, and he couldn't process the words. But there is more to it than that, and I did want to just take a moment and talk about it. It begins, he says, Yahweh. And it can't be Yahweh.
No, I changed it to.
Yeah, you changed it to Yahweh. And we know that it can't be Yahweh because the hey ending of a word. When we find a hey at the end of a word, it is pronounced ah 99.99% of the time in Hebrew. Yahweh told us that his name was based upon the verb haya. And Haya means to exist. There is a 0% possibility that the first He in Yahweh's name is the Ah, and the second A is the second He is an E. So, sorry, folks. It's Yahweh. Now, as for the W in the midst of Yahweh's name that this individual Christian selling books wants to ignore. When a W is found in a Hebrew word, it is a vowel, and it is pronounced O about 80% of the time. In fact, it's pronounced O on virtually every word that is commonly used today that is a transliteration of a Hebrew word, including two of the most repeated Hebrew words, Torah. The O in Torah is from the Waw, and in Shalom, the O sound in Shalom is from a Hebrew Waw. Even in Elohim and Eloah, which upon which it is based, the O sound is from a Waw. Goyim, one of the terms that the Jews love to use to degrade non-Jews, even Goyim, the O sound is from a Waw. There are places where the wa may have been pronounced as a double U. Not W the letter, but as two U's together. I my guess is that's a actual corruption of the pronunciation over time, but nonetheless, there is a 20% of words that still carry that legacy. So he has not used the tools that are available to analyze the proper pronunciation of Yahweh's name, nor has he looked at the Paleo-Hebrew, the ancient Hebrew text, to know what Yahweh's name means, which is a father's hand reaching down and out to us to lift up the two people standing in his name, representing Sarah and Abraham, the mother and father of the first child of the covenant, and the law in between, increasing and adding to them, securing them. That's a whole story in Yahweh's name. One of the greatest pictures in the language, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. That's the start of my journey more than anything else. That was my key word. I said, wow, just got deeper and deeper.
Yeah. Now, Barak doesn't mean to present gifts.
No.
And he has presenting gifts as part of it. Barak is based upon Berek. Berek is knee. And the verbal form is to be on one's knee. And so it is definitely to kneel down. Now, it's bow down is probably not correct because it's connected to the knee. It means to kneel down.
Mm-hmm.
When a father kneels down to his daughter or son, are they bowing down to their daughter or son, or are they just kneeling to be on the same level so that they can lift them up or at least look them face to face?
Sure, they're looking them in the eyes. Laying prostrate
before
the king or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's the concept of Barak. Now, it does convey a sense of esteem that you're getting down on your knees because you esteem someone. That you know, like you would a son or a daughter. You highly value them. You love them, which is why you're getting down on your knees. And Barak is always presented as Yahweh Barak.
Mm-hmm.
Gets down on his knees to lift us up. It's the antithesis of the religious perspective, where man gets down on his knees to lift God up. What a stupid thing to do. How can we lift God up? And the whole purpose of the covenant is because God wants to lift us up. But it does not mean presenting gifts. So it's Yahweh will kneel down, providing a blessing, as a result of love, as a result of esteem. And then this next will guard you with a hedge of protection. You know what the word is that underlies that?
I have to look here. Hedge of protection here. That was
it is different. Shamar. It is Shamar.
Shamar, yeah.
Yeah.
To observe.
When does Yahweh, what does Shamar mean?
Shamar is to observe, look right. Steady.
Right. Pay attention to, focus on.
Pay attention to, focus
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Care about, investigate, analyze, think about, be cognizant of, all of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Shamar is used primarily in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, where Yahweh says, I encourage you to shamar my Torah, my choke, those inscriptions that cut you into the relationship, my mitzvah, which are, I encourage you to observe the terms and conditions of the covenant, my mitzvot, which are the, I encourage you to observe the means to resolve disputes, which are the moed mikre. He's constantly saying, I think that it's in your interest to observe my testimony. Now, can observe under those circumstances, and that's the primary use of shamar, mean to hedge in?
Well, that's a stretch. That would be a secondary thing.
Yeah, I don't think you'd ever hedge it. The last thing you want to do is to hedge in, put a border, a protective border, around Yahweh's Torah. I mean, you want to share it.
Yeah.
Perspective.
Yeah, I was thinking
right.
more that,
right.
It keeps the predators away from you because you don't understand what he's talking
about. Yeah. way out there.
Way
out there, yeah. The extrapolation of shamar to keep is as follows. It's to be especially observant when protecting something that someone cares about, so that you are able to respond and to potential trouble, to a foe or to a predator, and so it can be used as a person standing watch over a community,
mm-hmm. but or a flock.
Yeah, or a flock. Or let's say that you have a child that is sick, or an individual in your family is under threat, and you would stand watch to protect them. Or you have a child that's sick, and you stay up all night just to be there should there be a turn so that you can respond, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're paying really close attention to their health. All of that would be an extrapolation of being observant, which is to closely examine, to carefully consider, to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the verb here. And so rather than saying Yahweh, we've already taken care of Barak, we'll kneel down in love to bless, and will. Now, what he's saying here is so important for us to understand. Pay attention to us. He's going to look after us. He's going to stand guard on us. He's going to be interested in us. He's going to focus on us. I mean, isn't the whole idea the reciprocal nature of if we focus on what's important to Yahweh, which is his Torah guidance on who he is and his covenant, if we focus on what's important to him, then he is going to prioritize us and he's going to care about us. He's going to notice us. He's going to focus on us. He's going to watch over us.
Mm-hmm. And he says it many times.
Yeah. And that's what this is saying, is that Yahweh, what you're looking for is you want Yahweh to pay attention to you. You want Yahweh to know you, to care about you, to be interested in you, to look after you. That's what we want as his children. We don't want him hedging us in. Now, you have become particularly adept at... You don't like it when I say you're adept at it. You're kind of like me. You don't, you cringe when somebody says you're good at something. You just say, no. Just a learner along the way. There are three letters that comprise Shamar.
Mm-hmm.
So they ought to tell us about the nature of Shamar. And none of those letters is the hedge, by the way.
No, I noticed that too.
Yeah, I figured you'd have.
I had it broken down here. I noticed that too.
Yeah. Okay. So you good, good. You're already ahead of the game. So the first letter is the shin, correct?
Mm-hmm. The SH. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And what is the shin?
That's the teeth.
You betcha. What is it? What does it convey?
Words, nourishment, food, good food,
yep.
Healthy food.
But words as nourishment is primarily the spoken word,
mm-hmm.
And words as nourishment. So the shin says, okay, this word means observe, and it begins with the Hebrew letter that conveys word. Should then maybe the object of our observation be the word?
That would be a good analogy.
I think so. So we'll return and consider the next two letters. All right, so the first letter in Shamar tells us what it is that we ought to be observing. And it isn't a protective fence of briars, is it?
No, it's a language.
Yeah, it's word.
Word.
It's the spoken and written word of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the shin. The next letter in Shamar is the Mem, and I suppose you've also looked and you know what how the Mem was drawn, don't you?
Oh yes, the it's a M with an extra M, so it's three V's basically connected upside down. So it's waves of water.
Waves of water. So it's what it's connecting, what it's conveying is water.
Mm-hmm.
And the there's three symbols associated with water. Yahweh uses water to convey symbolically three different yet very closely related things.
Mm-hmm. Life.
You know what those three things are?
Well, I was going to say life cleansing, purifying.
Right. Yeah, the source of life. The life emerged in water.
Water, yeah.
Right. And cleansing, water is the universal solvent. That's two. And I'm sure you know the third, even though it may be not on the tip of your tongue at the moment.
It's not on the tip of my tongue.
The spirit.
Spirit, okay.
The set-apart spirit.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah, the primary metaphor used to convey the Ruach Kodesh is the set-apart, is water. So, because she is the source of life.
Appropriate. We're just about to get to John.
Right. She's the absolutely. She's the source of life. She's the source of cleansing. Right. And by the way, she in John 3:16. In John 3, she is the one who provides us with eternal life. It's not the Son.
No.
It's the Spirit.
All right.
So she is associated with the water because the water cleanses us. And it's the source of life. And then there's a third letter, isn't there?
Uh-huh.
It's the Rosh, isn't it?
It's the Rosh, the head of a man.
Yeah, and it shows the eyes and the ears and the brain of a person, man or woman.
Hear and think, right?
Yeah, so this is, you use your eyes to observe, you use your ears to listen, you use your brain to process all of that, and you use your mouth to respond to what you have learned. It is the contemplative part of observing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you put it all together. If you focus on Yahweh's word and you use your eyes to read it, you use your ears to listen to it when it's recited, you process and consider what is said, and you respond to his word, you will enjoy the cleansing and life-giving properties of the set-apart spirit.
Right.
Now, that's a little better than being hedged in with a protective fence, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was just so much better than the other one.
Okay. I'm not being critical in the sense of... It's a lot better than the other. But the actual analysis of the words and precisely what the words mean is far richer.
Yeah. Well, that's why I write the little letters down just to... explore them.
Exactly.
So,
and by the way, both of these first two verbs, he will kneel down in love and bless and lifting you up, and he will pay attention to you, observe you, focus on you, care about you, think about you. Both of those were prefixed and the third person, masculine, singular. And they both are addressing Yahweh, who therefore is singular. But we get right back to the debate that we've had running because of the Yada Yah program on properly using the third person, singular masculine pronoun, and both of these verbs were prefixed with it because Yahweh is one.
Right.
And it's addressing Yahweh, who isn't two.
No.
So, Yahweh, he shall kneel down in love to lift you up, blessing you. And Yahweh, he shall pay attention to you, care about you, think about you, observe you, focus on you so as to keep you safe. And then again, he shall make shine, Yahweh, he shall make shine the face of him, the presence of him on you. We'll talk about what those words all mean when we return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering This. We're considering what's called the Aramaic blessing that is not Aramaic, Aaronic blessing that is provided in Devarim numbers in the sixth chapter. That's may the Lord have his faith shine upon you, may the Lord, you know, bless you and keep you and all that kind of stuff that's always said in Christian services. And this is wholesale corruption of what God actually said. But before we continue on it, Kirk, you're probably aware that every Hebrew name conveys a meaning that's important. Have you ever considered the meaning associated with Aaron?
Aaron is Aaron. That's oh gosh.
It's a combination of two words. And the two words combined mean enlightened free will.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So it's not just free will, but free will based upon being properly enlightened, meaning to know, to understand, to have shamar, you know, the benefit of shamaring, of being observant, closely examining, carefully considering the word, is you become enlightened. And when you exercise free will based upon an enlightenment, then you're in a much more important situation. So the person that is saying this His name means enlightened free will. So as a result of enlightened free will, now the first two verbs, the Barak and Shamar, were both written in the jusive mood. And that's, we're getting really deep into to Hebrew grammar.
I have to have my grammar chart to read.
Yeah, I know. And it's, what the jusive mood conveys, it's a first person expression of volition. So this is enlightened free will saying that I would like, it's my desire, it's my choice, it's my decision that, so given all that I have learned as an expression of my free will, I would like, that's the Joseph, Yahweh, to kneel down in love to lift you up. I would like, I want Yahweh to pay attention to you, to observe you, to focus on you, and through that focus, care about and protect you. So the first two verbs are both in that mood. The first was scribed in the peel stem, the second in the call stem. The peel stem tells us there's a relationship between the subject and the object. The subject here is Yahweh. The object is you and me. Mm-hmm. And the peel says that the subject influences the object in such a way that the object benefits directly from the actions of the subject.
Mm-hmm.
So if the subject is Yahweh and he kneels down in love to lift us up, we are the beneficiary of his action.
Right.
And we actually become a secondary subject. So we become like Yahweh based upon the peel when he engages in this way.
Which makes perfect sense when you get to shine.
Yes. Now, we'll get to shine in a moment.
Okay.
The second verb, shamar, was scribed not only with the jusive, so this is what enlightened free will wants, desires, chooses, but it was written in the call stem. So the observing is in the call stem. The call stem says there's a literal and actual relationship between the subject and the object of the verb. So in this particular case, with the shamar, it's so that Yahweh actually, genuinely, really, literally pays attention to you, focuses on you. You know, and that's the key to really unlock a total understanding of the covenant and who Yahweh is and what he's offering. Is when you recognize that Yahweh as dad pays attention to, cares about his children, the covenant's children. The rest of the people, he's oblivious to, doesn't care about at all. He ignores. But this is genuine, that Yahweh genuinely and actually and literally pays attention to his covenant children. Yeah, that's
pretty thrilling.
So,
pretty thrilling.
Yeah, so when you really get down into the stems and the moods, it becomes even stronger. Okay, so now you had mentioned make shine is the Hebrew.
Faith and then make shine, yeah.
Yeah, that Yahweh will observe and Yahweh will make shine, and the order of the Hebrew text is Yahweh, he will. And shine is really not the best
light.
Yeah, that Yahweh, that he will make his light. The Hebrew verb rosh, and it conveys light. It means to become light, to shine like light, but literally to become light.
Okay, well, I wrote down gives light. That was closer.
Yeah, so it's that Yahweh, who says he is light, is providing his light so that we become light. What he's saying is that he wants that the purpose of Yahweh interacting with us in this way, of him kneeling down to lift us up in love, of him caring about us and is paying attention to us and focusing on us, is causing us to inherit his light.
You know, and the better part of that also is, you know, you're always saying that when you have a light, there's no darkness, which is a
right.
common enough phrase. But I mean, when you are lit, and you do the things that causes you to be that way, mm-hmm. matzah, then the darkness doesn't exist there. So the arguments on some of this rule stuff is so stupid.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. So I mean, it's just Yahweh. Again, written in the Jusuf, so that is saying that enlightened free will chooses to have Yahweh's light become part of us. And that's that transition from mortal and material, physical, to spiritual and energy-based. This is the empowerment. This is the enlightenment. This is us being adopted into his family and becoming like him. This is why Yahweh took Abraham, when Abraham says, I don't get what you're talking about in inheritance. What am I going to, why are you talking about inheritance when I don't even have a kid?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Yahweh took him to the light of the stars and to the spiritual realm to show him that what you're inheriting is, as my child, you're becoming like me. You're going to be empowered and enlightened in this way. And so Aaron is expressing this, that we are, rather than physically, bodily resurrected, that we are transitioned into light based upon what Yahweh is doing. And it says, so it's Yahweh, he shall make... and it's Yahweh, I want him to make his light and his face, his presence, his very nature come upon you. Wow.
Wow, yeah.
That's Pene, his presence. And Pene, presence, is immediate proximity presence and a face-to-face presence. So it's, yeah, and when Yahweh is paying attention to you, he's not turned away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be considered face only because you're face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, can you be face-to-face if you're kneeling down?
No.
No, not unless you're trying to address HaSatan down there in Sheol. No, to be face-to-face, two things have to happen. Yahweh has to get down on his knees to lift us up, and then we have to be standing.
Right.
Are the two people in Yahweh's name both standing?
They're both standing.
Yeah. Son of a gun. How that works. All consistent, isn't it? So Yahweh makes his light become part of us. His very presence is part of us. That's what this says. And then it concludes with, and he shall be, and we're dealing with the Hebrew word chanan.
Uh-huh.
And chanan does not mean gracious.
No.
Because gracious is based upon a transliteration of the Roman, the Latin, the gratia, which are the naked girls of sex and lasciviousness. No, it's chanan is mercy, undeserved favor. It's a gift that we have not earned that is highly desirable, highly favorable, highly beneficial. But Chanan is a gift that we have not earned or deserved, but is nonetheless given to us. That we might ourselves deserve a different status,
mm-hmm.
fate, but through mercy, through this undeserved favor, we get a much more favorable state.
Right. And we just learned it wasn't given to us lightly. He wanted to do that.
Right. Yes. So, powerful, powerful concepts that are being conveyed all the way through here, and it's so much richer In fact, in this particular text that we're reviewing, it's called Yahochanan, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is
Yahochanan is a
deserved.
Yeah, it's a combination of Yahweh's name and Chanan, mercy. So mercy is an extremely important concept throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's used much more in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms than is charis, the charities is used in the so-called Christian New Testament, even with that being Paul's favorite word. So there's a lot to learn here, and you know, even as you go through this, lifting up, the whole purpose of Yahweh getting down on his knees and showing us mercy is to lift us up. And it's Yahweh is lifting us up to his presence. And then he is the one who is providing us, and it's Nathan, one of the most common Hebrew words, Nathan. He is providing us with shalom.
Yes, Lord.
Reconciliation.
Right.
The relationship, the covenant is reconciled. We're family. To Shattering Myths, recognizing this, what we've just considered in the Aaronic blessing, the enlightened, the blessing of, which, let's just call it what it is. It is the blessing of enlightened free will. I would like to return to Yahochanan 3, because the next two statements emblazon this. Whoever relies upon him is not separated, but whoever does not rely sounds separated already, because he has not trusted in the proper name of God's one and only Son. What name was used in the enlightened, the blessing of enlightened free will?
Yahusha.
Yahweh. No, Yahweh twice.
I'm sorry. Yahweh.
Yeah, in the Torah there, in the Bamidbar statement. It's Yahweh's name.
Yes.
And Yahweh's name twice. And Yahusha's name is based on Yahweh's name.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, really, Yahusha doesn't have a name.
No.
It's an identity statement. It's a mission statement. It means Yahweh is the one who is saving us. Now, that is made abundantly clear by the next statement, because what was the benefit of the blessing of enlightened free will is that Yahweh's light is transferred to us. His very presence, his light is transferred to us, is given to us. It says, this is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men love the darkness instead of the light, because their behavior was wicked, evil, morally corrupt, and worthless. So who is the light? And, you know, in the Torah's depiction there of the ultimate blessing, who is the light?
Yes, always Yahweh.
Yeah. That was also prefixed in the third person masculine singular, and the verb is directly associated with the name Yahweh, and it's Yahweh's light.
Mm-hmm.
So, this light that came into the world, who was that light?
That was Yahusha coming into the world, but Yahweh.
Yeah, absolutely. All Yahusha is a set apart, diminished manifestation of Yahweh.
Yeah.
So, that particular statement that you read, and you read it because you wanted to talk about how horrible the scholars' translations are, because...
Right.
You know, it's the, may the Lord bless you and keep you, and may the Lord make his face to shine upon you. And how horrible that is compared to what the actual words say. And that, so you were using to say, why would anybody trust a Hebrew scholar when a Hebrew scholar have so destroyed their these translations as to render the profound irrelevant at best? And yet it really applies directly to this conversation that Yahusha is having with the Nicodemus. He is referring to enlightened free will and to this very blessing, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's actually where I was going to start with you today.
Okay.
Is that whole thing is, of course, you know, we've got a lot of more meat on this bone, so.
Yes.
stuff. I was this morning I got up and I was writing. I know we're short on time now, but
yeah.
You know, in light of that, I made a little list of who goes to rabbis. Who, name one person that y'all likes that went to a rabbi or a priest to get their marching instructions. It's always Dov. Just take one example. Dov, where did he learn it? He went to the Torah.
Went to the Torah.
Man after God's own heart. He went to the Torah.
Is there any establishment for rabbi in the Torah?
Absolutely not.
Is there any mention of a rabbi in the Torah, prophets, or Psalms?
No, that's all Babylon. It all came out of Babylon from the captives.
Yeah,
captives.
Absolutely. Yeah, men decided they wanted to be exalted. They wanted to be lifted up. They wanted to become great. And they wanted to, it's just like Hasatan wanted to be greater than the Most High.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be above the Most High. Well, to apply the term rabbi, which means exalted and lifted up and great, in connection with God, is to say you want to be satanic. You want to lift yourself up above the Most High. And so the rabbis are not only someone that God refuses to work with and through, they're adversarial to him.
Yeah, but by contrast, you know, Paul thought they were wonderful.
Well, Paul was one. Paul was one. Of course.
You get right back to it. To go to. That's a great
right.
Source.
Yeah, God has no use for professionals, but does like to hang with and pay attention to, care about, focus on those amateurs like you and me. And aren't we the lucky beneficiaries?